to Lions Collective every single Wednesday at 6 p.m., even when the NFL Combine is happening, the NFL Scouting Combine. You are joined by the same crew as always. I'm your host, Jeff Iafredi from Crunchtime Sports. We got Justin Rogers, Detroit Football Network, Colton Pouncey, which I need to switch this. There you go.
Oh, there we are.
Colton Pouncey from The Athletic. And then Will Birchfield, 97.1, The Ticket. How are we doing, fellas?
We're grinding.
Busy.
It's my first downtime in like all day, really.
Yeah. And you're making content. Congratulations.
I need a nap, bro. I need a nap.
I need a Colonel Lager. Like 7 of them.
Yeah, I tried to bring the Colonel Lagers down. We talked about that last week. Unsuccessful. I don't promote drinking and driving. I didn't even put alcohol in the vehicle. So I'm trying to be, but shout out to Kyle. It would be a hell of a move if I brought down some Colonel Lagers. Indy, I haven't checked out any breweries here, but I'm definitely with you though, Will. I'm missing some Colonel Lagers. I really am.
I think it's important to note that this is the 10th different location Will has broadcast from.
Yes, double digits, baby. I did it.
New record.
I did it.
Yeah, we've clocked in double digits at this point. So shout out to Will. We got a packed show. I mean, I know the last couple shows, it's kind of been the off season. So, we've been diving into different topics. But down here in Indy, you heard from Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell on Tuesday, and then Wednesday today got to speak to a lot of the players and got to kind of know a little bit of their story. But we'll just start with some of the news that happened actually the same day Brad and Dan spoke. Ironically enough, I know you guys were talking. Who are you guys talking to as soon as the Taylor announced his return? You guys, I'm sure, were in a pickle because you're talking to a coordinator. And then Taylor Decker on Instagram just says, "Hey guys, by the way, I'm back. I know you're busy, but I'm back and I'm returning." So that was the big news that happened. But what was your guys' kind of initial reaction to it? Hearing Dan and Brad speak about, Taylor Decker and Dave Montgomery's future, and then bang, he announces, "I am not retiring. I'm coming back," on Instagram.
I had checked in with Taylor on something else maybe a couple weeks ago and, wasn't really pushing for information on the retirement because I knew he was weighing that decision. But he kind of cut me off at the pass and said, "Hey, I'm still, working through things," which told me this was a very realistic possibility that he was, I think, checking the boxes of whether he could come back. As we talked about last week, I thought that the decision, based on kind of some of the things I was hearing out of the building, would come before the start of the new league year in early March. But I think Taylor probably watched Dan Campbell and Brad Holmes's press conference where they both were asked questions about the future. And they're like, "Hey, we're giving him space. We're letting him decide in his own time." And he's just like, "Let's do this.
Yeah.
Let's queue up the Instagram, drop the Bible verse, and lock and load." It couldn't have been worse timing for our schedules. We were busy, as you mentioned. I think we were about 4 minutes from talking to Calvin Shepard. Some of us had a partner in crime down here to kind of help us navigate this. This crew did not. Yeah. So we were all collectively in a jam. But I think it's really good news for the Lions. It doesn't put the pressure on finding a immediate starter at left tackle. They can go out. I think they still need to get the left tackle of their future, or at least be looking for that, as Dan Campbell alluded to. But that guy doesn't need to start day one. Can be somebody that's groomed for that role, whether that's stepping in an injury situation this year or more preferably to start the 2027 season.
Yeah, I think most of us were kind of snuggled up close on the couch waiting for Shep to come out when that news broke. I think Jeremy was
fireside chat.
Wow.
Exactly. I think Jeremy was the first one to see it. And he goes, "Oh, I think Taylor just said he's coming back." And we're all just like, "What? Are you kidding me?" This is how it goes, though. Always never dull moment at the combine. But yeah, man, I mean, when you're looking at that news, I was kind of surprised at some of the reaction. I'll say that. I think it was mostly positive. I don't want to say a lot of people were, out there and complaining, but I did get a lot of tweets that are like, "This is bad news. Taylor's cooked. He's going to play two games next year. This is bad. We're not going to draft a tackle." And I'm like, guys, this is the best case scenario for the situation. And obviously Taylor's going to have to do some load management on that shoulder. We'll probably be missing Wednesday practices. Hopefully it gets better and with some time and some rest in the off season. But if he does have to load manage it, I think the idea is he can come up with a game plan this time around. Last year, he was hoping that offseason shoulder surgery would be enough to kind of manage that throughout the season, and obviously had some setbacks and it just got worse. So with the game plan, and I'm sure he talked it over with his wife, I think it makes sense to make this decision. And look, it doesn't mean the Lions aren't still going to draft a tackle in the first or second round. I think they had to do that regardless. That's something that Dan kind of hinted at. Like, look, man, like, we love Taylor, but, you know, he did miss some time, and we still got to bring in a body, is essentially what he was saying when he talked to us the other day. So I really – he said that regardless of Taylor's decision. He didn't even know a decision was coming that day, but he was saying things like that. Like, we need to add, like, some insurance here, essentially. So I don't think this rules him out for a tackle in any way, shape, or form. I think it also just kind of intensifies what you can do having Taylor Decker back. Like, it gives you insurance for a starting quality tackle, which are hard to find. You can't just go out and find one of those dudes in free agency more often than not. And if there is one out there, bidding wars for them, right? So I think having Taylor Decker back gives you extra time. You can still draft and develop a tackle. And I think Taylor, if that's the plan, would be a phenomenal mentor to whatever young prospect they bring in here. Because he was like that with Giovanni Manu and was taking him to Arizona, taking him under his wing. And, you know, you can argue the results there. It could just be the player at that point. But I think Taylor has done everything he realistically could to bring Gio along. And I would imagine he'd do the same thing if they draft a tackle in the first or second round. So this feels like a slam dunk to me. I'm not really sure why some people are upset about this and saying, like, oh man, they got Taylor back, so they're going to kick that can down the road. And if they do that, we can have that conversation. But I'm looking at my phone right now. I believe it's February 25th, if I'm not mistaken. So we got a lot of time until then, and just, you know, settle down for a second is what I would say.
Yeah. I also feel like Taylor took some undue flack for the way he played last season. I know that he was hampered by the injury, and maybe his play wasn't as smooth by the end of the year as it was earlier in the season, but he's a very honest self-evaluator. Like, Justin and Colton, you know this, guys. If you go to ask Taylor questions about his own play, he's not going to bullshit you. And he said repeatedly over the course of last season that he felt like he was playing some of, if not the best football of his career. And his biggest frustration was that he felt like he could have been playing even better had he had time to actually practice during the week. But because of the way that the injury unfolded and the rehab piled up on him, he just never had time to sharpen his game, like, Tuesday through Friday. And so I would imagine, as Colton said, that he's found or discovered a plan that will allow him to do that this year. And that probably emboldened him to come back, knowing that if he could, you know, stack some more practice time on the way that he was playing on Sundays last year, he can still be a viable, valuable left tackle in the NFL on a team with Super Bowl aspirations. The other piece worth pointing out here is, like, yeah, I know the Lions would have saved about $10 or $11 million in cap space had Decker retired. You're not getting a player who is close to Decker's caliber at left tackle with $10 to $12 million of extra cap space. For reference, Cam Robinson, who has truly never been better than average over his, like, 10-year career and has probably more often than not been worse than average, signed last year with the Texans on a one-year deal for $12 million because that's what, like, average to substandard offensive tackle or left tackle play goes for on the open market if there's a track record of availability and some level of dependability. So it would have been a clear downgrade if you were going to reinvest that money at the position. But I agree with these guys. Decker's return does not preclude the Lions from drafting his successor this year in 2 months. In fact, I think they will. I think they'll make a move at that position on the first day or two of the draft. And now that player will have time to learn beneath Decker's wing. And honestly, maybe one of the best things to happen to the Lions long term was getting a pretty uncomfortable look at Gio Manu last year when he had to go in there against Cincinnati and being forced to recognize that, okay, at least in 2026 and maybe beyond, that's really not a guy we can count on as an immediate injury insurance plan and possibly not as a long-term succession plan.
You know, Colton, I think it's just a good reminder, Twitter's not real life, right? Like, it's a place where people love to bitch about everything. Jeff, did you immediately go on Twitter and have a Drew Petzing, like, meltdown on the Decker return? I didn't see.
I this is where I think on the show we can this is like, for me, this is personal growth. I'm going through this, you know what I mean? I think you guys have helped me. No crash out on Twitter. But yes, to Justin's point, the more I do this, the more I believe that Twitter is fake. It's not real. All the things that are said on Twitter, I've never seen said like in person. You don't hear it. So I agree with that.
Logging into Twitter is like running through the brick wall at platform 9 3/4. you just enter a fantastical world.
Yeah.
But there's no like magical owls or anything, right? Like that. Will.
Yeah, there's nothing sweet back there. Just all dementors.
you brought up Cam Robinson, correct, Will?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, I had one pulled up as well. I had Jalen Moore from last year, and that was a backup offensive tackle, a third guy that maybe had shown some promise in San Francisco. Kansas City went out and paid him 2 years, $28 million, and then they went and drafted a tackle in the first round and immediately made that worthless. But by the end of the year, he was like third on their depth chart, and they're paying him $14 million a year. Like, it's a really expensive position to replace. And, you know, I want to go back to Manu just for a second. And look, if the Lions use the 17th pick in the draft to draft an offensive tackle, I think probably could write Manu off. But if it's anything beyond that, if it's a second rounder or beyond, I think the window of competition is still open. You know, I think that's a guy that's clearly developmental, right? But I don't think he was a train wreck when he went in there in Cincinnati. I thought he was better than I anticipated against obviously one of the best edge rushers in football and Trey Hendrickson. You know, this is a guy that is still exponentially growing in his experience and his opportunities. He's gonna have another offseason working with LaCharles Bentley, and now he's gonna have another full season of sitting behind Taylor Decker and growing with Hank Fraley, and maybe Drew Petzing can bring something to the table. So I'm not writing off Gio Manu quite yet, unless, you know, they're going to draft a tackle 17, then, you know, put me in the write-off camp.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I was making that statement based on what Brad Holmes said about Gio Manu at the end of the season, which was very clear. He was like, I forget the exact wording, but the implication was that we can't depend on him in 2026 without having another plan in place. So, you know, they're looking at him through a very realistic lens.
Agreed. Yep.
Well, I think the other player that's interesting, and, you know, we talked about him when, you know, we talked about him, we've been talking about him all offseason, really, but Dave Montgomery, he spoke at Radio Row at the Senior Bowl and was, you know, talking about playing with Jahmyr Gibbs, talking about, you know, his future with the Lions, and I know he's under contract. I know he loves the Lions. I'm not sure he's so happy maybe with his role last year. You know, he made that clear. Or not clear, depending on, you know, you look at his Instagram, some of the hints he threw out there. But Brad and Dan both kind of aligned with how much they appreciate David. Drew Petzing, also a guy who's a big David Montgomery guy. And, you know, I think for him, the sentiment that we keep hearing, and this is where I would like to know your guys' insight on this, but it's, you know, the Lions want him. I think David would want to come back, but it seems like there's maybe this, like, I don't know. I would, at least, and it's just my perspective. Correct me if I'm wrong. Maybe I would expect a little more certainty from the Lions side. Maybe it's like, oh, he's coming back. If David wanted to come back as much as I maybe assume he does. So what's your guys' kind of take on this Dave Montgomery stuff? Your thoughts on the likelihood he does return? Because we know from the Lions side they love him and appreciate him.
Let me read the quote from Brad Holmes just so the people have it, right? I remember exactly who asked the question, but, you know, what's the latest on David Montgomery? And Brad said, "I've been in touch with David's agent and his representation. Obviously, look, we love David. He's a great player. We'd love to have him. Kind of want to put last year in the rear view and just move forward. But a player has to want to be at a certain place as well. So those conversations are still fluid, and we're just going to kind of see how it goes." And within the context of those conversations, both Dan and Brad said they've kind of given him his space. But that last part of the statement just kind of rattles around your brain a little bit, right? That tells me that the last conversation that they had, probably the exit interview where they went into any kind of depth with it, David expressed what we already kind of knew, like his unhappiness with his role and probably an unwillingness to continue forward if that's what it was going to be. And you got the sense that Drew Petzing hire, just some of David's comments at the Super Bowl, intrigued him. And, you know, maybe open that door back up to, you know, b- building back that bridge. But I think Holmes is being cautious here, you know, because he doesn't know if it is repairable. And so those conversations still need to take place. We're coming up here on the new league year, but I don't think they feel the same urgency they did with Decker to make that decision. You know, this one might be able to extend out to May, but I think you do want to know what you're going to do at the running back position, because it's not something where Jahmyr Gibbs can carry the load all season long. I know he can do it in short spurts, but you do want that complement in the backfield that can spill him, can spell him and give him, you know, just take some of the stress off of his legs so you get the best Jahmyr Gibbs over the course of the full season.
I think my question is, like, where is this relationship at if Brad is saying these types of things, you know? Like, I'm just curious, like, whether it's exit interviews or just general body language throughout the season, which I think some of us have seen with our own eyes. Like, he wasn't probably in a great space, probably wasn't super thrilled with his touches this year. I think that's pretty clear to all of us. But, like, to a point where it's, you know, again, almost late February, almost March, and he's talking about – Brad's up here talking about, you know, a player has to want to be at a certain place as well. So things are kind of fluid here. And, like, we're a couple weeks out from free agency, and you know, trade market's going to get going here pretty soon. If we're still at that point where things are that fluid, it makes you wonder if, like, he has kind of put out the bat signal, like, not sure I want to be here. You know, what's the next step here? And if that's the case and he doesn't want to be here, then you got to move on, I guess. I think for a long time I was of the opinion they could smooth things out. And, I mean, you just signed him to an extension. So, like, the ball is in the team's court, obviously. That's kind of the mindset I was taking. Like, I mean, just make him play. Like, he's under contract, and that's your guy. You hired a new offensive staff, some really smart guys that can find ways to give him the ball in ways that he didn't get it last year. But as this continues to drag out into almost March, I'm almost at the point where it's like, you know, with Taylor Decker, they had a conversation, like, please let us know before the start of the new league year. At what point are they going to give Dave Montgomery a deadline? Be like, do you want to play for us or not? Like, let us know so we can either move on, or if you do want to be back, like, we promise we'll work with you to get you the touches you need. But at the same time, like, his touches went down because Jahmyr Gibbs is so good, man. Like, I don't – like, there's so many mouths to feed in this offense, whether it's the pass game or the run game. And, you can say situationally – maybe we could get David more touches at the beginning of games, maybe because of game flow and needing to pass in certain situations, Gibbs was a better player for this specific instance. I understand how this season played out, and I think a lot of that factored into it. But if they view him as a piece, like, they have to sell that vision to him if they want to keep him around, I suppose, if that's where the relationship is at this point. So I'm just kind of curious, like, does David Montgomery want to be here? Yes or no? And, like, maybe a good follow-up for some of these questions would have been, has he requested a trade? Are we at that point? And maybe that's on us for not going there. But I'm really curious where this is at after these comments are still lingering, I guess.
Yeah, when the Lions asked Demo if he wants to be part of the team next year, he asks them, are you signing Tyler Linderbaum? and then I'll make my decision. Because, like, the truth of the matter is, like, yeah, yes, the Petsing hire in theory should entice David to come back, and it should help the Lions rediscover ways to involve him in the offense. But as you just touched on, Colton, it was also an offensive line issue last season that forced the Lions to not abandon Debo, but move away from him in a lot of games where the rushing efficiency was so low that they ended up in these second and longs and third and longs and were throwing the ball, and he just didn't have, like, a natural fit in the flow of that game. So I honestly wonder if he's curious to see what kind of reinforcements they make to the offensive line before giving them, like, a firm answer. But this situation in my mind has flipped from the beginning of the offseason. I always thought that it was going to be kind of on the Lions to decide if they would want David around based on what they were going to pay him, what he was going to cost against the cap, and versus what they used him as last season. And in reality, it's clearly David who has to decide if he wants to be here. I mean, the Lions have painted a picture of a player who potentially, quite possibly, wants out. And now it's a matter of luring him back in. And I do wonder if David is just waiting for almost like a full accounting of what the roster is going to look like before committing one way or another. I'm not sure the Lions can afford him that luxury.
Yeah, I think the David Sepp, obviously people would want him back. He's a very good player. Again, Drew Petzing wants him back, so we'll see what happens. But you know, when you got to, you guys got to, you know, speak to Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell, which people were waiting on hearing from. Is there anything else that stood out to you guys that was worth noting that you think people aren't talking about enough, et cetera?
Yeah, we came into that conversation last week, right? Like, what did we want to hear? And the first thing for me was I wanted to hear, we didn't have the coaching staff yet, but it didn't look like they were going to make any changes on defense. That turned out to be true, right? It was the same defensive staff. Jim O'Neill, the safety coach, got a elevation with assistant head coach, but that's not a real change to the setup over there. And so, like, why was the offense getting all the attention when it was the better unit? I mean, we saw the flaws, but overall was the more effective unit, and the defense finished bottom half of the league, struggled with explosive plays. Why didn't you give that attention? And Campbell kind of clipped that question off in his opening comments, and maybe it was like the first sentence of his opening comments, where he said that right now they're going through the cutups, they're going through the play-by-play, they're breaking down all the film, and I'm spending most of my time with the defense right now. It's like, oh, okay, you've handed off the offensive play calling. That was a big concern last year, is maybe that took too much of his attention. Well, now that he has more time, he's reinvesting in helping out the defense. So the addition in the way I saw it and the way I asked him about it was, are you the change to the defensive staff? Is your extra set of eyes, your, you know, overall football IQ bringing something different to the operation? And he, you know, I think he said fair assessment, right? But it's interesting to me, and I think it's probably a positive that is the pullback for Dan Campbell in handing off play calling, is that he's going to take a bigger picture look at this team and help bring along a staff he clearly believes in. You know, he believes in all those position coaches. They were brought on for a reason. But he also, as we've talked about all through this offseason, as people wanted changes or wanted firings, like, he believes in Calvin Shepard. And I think that is kind of unequivocal. Like, he believes he has something special there. He knows he's young. He knows he's making mistakes, but he sees a really, really bright future with this guy. And, you know, he's going all in and helping him by being that exercise to achieve that greatness.
If you want to think of it from a draft perspective, it's almost like, in Dan's mind, Calvin Shepard was a first round pick at DC for him. Developmental, needs some, you know, refining a little bit here, but sees the potential and thinks that he can be a dude down the road. Now his year one, his rookie year, there's some ups and downs, right? Like, there's some growing pains. And when he lost some guys on his defense, especially in the backfield, back end, you know, it took a bit of a dive. And so I think Dan's not really giving up on him, because he knows, he believes that Shep can be a really good defensive coordinator in this league, based on having been around him for years since he started this thing here in Detroit. So if that's the case, I think it would have been reactionary to fire him after 1 year. I know a lot of people want a scheme change, and to me, a scheme change would really only come if you made a firing. But I didn't really view that as realistic, because I know how Dan feels about Shep, and I've talked to Shep, and I know how Shep feels about Dan. So that relationship is really one of the strongest and most important on this team. So if that's the case, you keep your guys in place, keep your other coaches in place here, and keep that core staff intact. Where do you go from here? And so I think what I would like to see next is get better athletes on the field, get better team speed, and you can win on the margins with some of these guys that might be leaving free agency, and try to get a different type of body type or a different type of skill set if they're going to keep this defense in place, which, you know, Shep kind of made it clear. You know, he was talking about Mike McDonald and the Seahawks, and he's heard the talk that a lot of people want them to go get, you know, Nicky Minwori, like their own version of that, get a big nickel or something like that, which I've been one of those guys saying that they could probably use. But at the same time, he kind of made a point, like, well, I mean, he's a 6'3", 225, like, DB. Like, of course, if I had that guy, I would play him. I think you can find guys that can do similar things. And I guess my overall point is finding different athletes that can maximize the skill set and then maximize the scheme that you already have in place. So that's what I would like to see from Shep in the defense. But, you know, one thing that I guess I took away from Dan talking, and this is something I think I mentioned last week, but, like, he keeps preaching, like, wanting more competition. He said it, like, January 5th, his end of the year press conference. I think he said it on SiriusXM radio, like after we talked to him, but he keeps going to this like idea of healthy chaos, healthy competition. And, you know, he said, somebody's always dangling the carrot. That's like the sort of mentality that he wants. He said, I just think that lifts the floor, man. Not a Dan Campbell quote without at least one man in there. And if it lifts the floor, it makes your whole team better. What I've noticed from Dan, there's like a serious sense of urgency. And I kind of recognize that in January when he last talked to us. He was already talking about things he wants to do in training camp and get back to some things that they did early on when he was here. And he didn't really go into too much detail in that. But like the fact that he's already thinking about that as soon as the season ended tells me he was not happy with how things ended and he wants this to be different. And there was a sense of urgency as soon as that season ended that he wants to kind of go full throttle here and get this back on the right track. And so I think right now you see some of that in Campbell's answers just the other day. You feel that urgency. You feel the just the want and the need to be better. And I love that from DC, honestly. I think he's setting the tone for everyone around him, setting the tone for the players, but also the front office and Brad. And, like, just get me some dudes and, like, we'll make it work. I think that's sort of his mentality this offseason. And I like that at DC because, you know, they've been almost like complacent, but, like, they're happy with what they had last year after a 15-2 season. And I wanted to see if there was going to be a mindset shift after you fall to fourth place in 9-8. And I think I'm starting to see that from Dan at least. And I think it's needed, honestly.
Yo, J-Raj, is there someone like right in your vicinity doing a stand-up news report or something?
He's pretty far away, but I can mute when I'm not talking.
I feel like anyone else hearing all that feedback?
I'm hearing it, but
I don't think it's in my vicinity. It might be yours, J-Raj. A couple items of note from Holmes' press conference, as I think we duly noted on this very pod a couple weeks ago when the news broke about Levi and Pascal's extensions tolling or contracts tolling into 2026. Josh Pascal is no guarantee to be on this roster. In fact, after hearing from Brad Holmes yesterday, I would bet it's more likely that he's not by the time the season begins. He was not outlining their plans as if they were definitely going to include Josh Pascal. On the topic of Graham Glasgow, he was similarly noncommittal. I don't have any belief that Graham Glasgow will be back, which obviously brings us back into the center conversation. Brad insists that Tate Ratledge remains an option for them at center. I just don't think that's real, and I don't think it's all that responsible to assume that a guy who's never played center in his life is going to learn how to play center in the NFL. I guess it's fine to keep it on the table as a secondary or third option, but Tate is a very good right guard. He is very comfortable at right guard. He much prefers to play right guard than center. He has expressed that to the Lions, and I think by moving a potential Pro Bowl right guard to a position at center that he's never played before, you're creating two problems out of one. I don't think Tate Ratledge will solve the Lions' issues at center, and you would create some by moving him off right guard. So the simplest solution for the Lions, and Brad Holmes said as much yesterday, is just to find a guy at center who's played center before, a proven center. And I think the most sort of prudent move at center would be to trade for a veteran who is cost controlled and, you know, under contract for one or two more years so that you could draft a center this year who will need a year or two to develop and then plug them in 2027 or 2028. Like I don't think there are day one starting caliber centers in this year's draft. I know some people think Sam Hecht might be, some people think that Jake Slaughter might be, or Trey Zune might be, but all of those guys, I get the sense, would definitely benefit from a year in the NFL where they can practice and learn under the wing of a proven center. So if the Lions can make a move there, and this was another thing that jumped out to me about Dan's presser. He was talking about the situation on the offensive line and of his own accord pivoted to the interior of the offensive line and mentioned that the Lions have done a lot of digging there and sort of looking into moves that they might be able to make while also acknowledging that, like, it's hard to know who's going to be available based on who gets re-signed or doesn't get re-signed by their current teams, who might be available was the subtext that I took on the trade market. And so they're kind of waiting for those situations to reveal themselves before they start making a move there. So I do think that the Lions will bring in a veteran center next season, this offseason. I understand the urge to keep Tate as an option on the table. I just don't think it behooves them to seriously pursue that. And look, they gave it like 3 days of look last year in training camp, and it looked bad enough that they pivoted to Graham Glasgow. So if I'm calling the shots here, which I'm not, but if I am, I'm letting Tate be at right guard, where he might be a Pro Bowler soon, and I'm solving center this offseason with a proven player.
I thought that was just a giant opportunity for Will to flex again, that he can say Froholt's first name with like the full.
I'll leave it to you, Yelda. I guess no, I just did it.
I can't do it. You make it sound so easy.
No, but I like Froholt and Brewer are two very realistic or sensible targets, I should say, for the Lions if they're looking into the trade market at center. Both those guys are entering contract seasons. Both those guys play for ostensibly rebuilding teams who probably would value draft capital more than, say, a premium player at a non-premium position that they probably don't have plans to re-sign after this year. So if that's true in either case with Arizona or Miami, I think it makes a whole lot of sense for the Lions to call those teams and see if, it wouldn't be a third-round pick this year, but maybe a future third-round pick would be enough to get one of those guys here for 2026 and then draft the successor this year for 2027.
I think another thing that stood out for me, guys, was the talk of the splurge signing, right? And mm-hmm. I've kind of dismissed this idea all offseason just because the Lions are currently over the cap. They have some maneuvering that they can do to get under, but they also have all these extensions they want to get done, and it just didn't seem feasible. But Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell both kind of left the door open and maybe kind of a really interesting way. And, you know, obviously people are going to take that and run with it and get super excited, and we're going to get all the Linderbaum headlines again. I don't, you know, who knows if they could find $22 million, but I also didn't think they had the money last year to go sign DJ Reed. And I thought that was kind of a splash signing to some extent. So I guess I don't want to dismiss it. And the fact that Brad opened the door to it in a way that maybe he hasn't in the past was something that caught my ear, but I think it's in sharp contrast to the idea of competition, right? Because if you want to add more competition, that means you need more depth at lots of spots. And if you make a splash signing, it takes away your ability to sign, you know, 4 or 5 people that can push starters. And so I really feel like they're at a fork of the road here in some ways of whether they want to add the one big piece and go all in, or if they want to kind of stick to their plan, manage the long-term health of the cap of the roster to build out that competition that Colton's talking about that obviously is very important. And so, you know, I think it's going to be really interesting to see how much cap space they clear with cuts. And there aren't many cuts they could do to clear cap space with maybe getting some guys to take some pay cuts. Could they ask Decker to take a pay cut? I don't think it's totally out of the question. Not going to free a ton of cap space. And then obviously all the opportunities to restructure contracts. How aggressive are they going to be? Are they going to clear 60, 70 million, or are they going to clear the 30, 40 million that we kind of anticipated all along?
I thought you were going to say 130, whatever that number was a few weeks ago.
Sorry, Will. No,
Shout out Will.
Shout out Will.
No, I would agree with that. I mean, that kind of stood out to me. I mean, Brad's quote was, we'll have flexibility to do some things. I don't think every single year is the same. And this was, you know, to a question about like splurging free agency versus, you know, trying to draft, develop and retain your own guys. He said, it's not just last year that we had this approach, but it could be entirely different this year. Essentially leaving the door open. And that's usually more than he's willing to say on this subject, at least. Like, I feel like we ask him this every year because the fans always want to know. But, you know, last year at owners meetings, it was like, well, you know, you can't always go on the vacation you want to go on. You got to save some money, be responsible, you know, all that stuff. That's not really what we got this time. So that kind of stood out to me a little bit. I don't know if it's going to lead to the huge splash move that some people want. I don't think it's going to lead to Linderbaum, just kind of my own thoughts here. But there's a Connor McGovern level player that you can bring in here, and that fixes a very important need at a position that makes sense to target in free agency because it's a veteran, because you don't have to wait for that player to develop and you know, have a repeat of last year, or try to move Tate to center and play that experiment. No, just cut out the risk and get a proven guy. I think it would make sense for them to do something like that while freeing up some money to go out and make that move. That's not something that they've usually done, but there are some examples like DJ Reed in past years, going to get DJ Reader to kind of, you know, I shore up the run game a couple years ago. They've kind of, I know Brad likes to say, Brad hints that like they spend more than people think. They're not cheap. But he used DJ Reed as an example last year. He's like, I mean, we got a $16 million cornerback. I don't know what you want me to do. But I do think they can make a mid-tier level move or a slightly above mid-tier level move this year if they want to make that move, if they feel the sense of urgency is there and they're in that competitive window, which they are. So we'll see.
Yeah, and in the same way that they traded a third-round pick for Carlton Davis to fill their need at cornerback a couple years ago, you know, they could make that move for, say, a center if that's where they feel like they need to go this offseason. The other question I had for Brad that I couldn't get in despite trying to like four or five times was, you know, they seem already inclined to extend Laporta and Branch. And I just wanted to ask him, like, do you need to see what these guys look like coming off of pretty serious injuries before committing to paying them long-term deals? Obviously, they're extension eligible this offseason, and the Lions prefer to avoid having their in-house guys go to free agency. But I don't know, if I were him, like, I would want to know what Brian Branch looks like coming off a torn Achilles. I would want to know what Sam Laporta looks like coming off back surgery. But, you know, they might be comfortable with the medical reports enough just to try and lock those guys up now. But maybe those are conversations that they need to stall or delay until they see these guys play a little bit next season.
I don't know if it's weird, but like, I feel better about Sam Laporta's recovery than Brian Branch's. And maybe that's obvious. I don't know, but you know, getting a herniated disc repair, it sounds scary, but the procedure is actually pretty minimally invasive to get that, just that protrusion trimmed. I fully expect him to be ready for training camp, but like, I can't get out of my head Tracy Walker. And I understand Brian Branch was a superior player than Walker ever was, right? But Tracy Walker was a good player here and a good starter. And when he tore that Achilles, when he came back, like, he was never the same, and he's out of the league now. And so, you know, I just, IQ can cover up a lot of things, right? If you can diagnose and be quick to read and quick to react, then it covers up a lot of things. And Brian Branch was never, relatively speaking, an elite athlete for his position. But I do worry, like, what level of explosion will be lost. And often we see with Achilles, more so than even like an ACL, like, it's that second full year back that you're really right. Well, at that point, you're already into the extension. So there is some guesswork here involved, and that's a concern.
Now, I'll tell you what, we'll take a quick break. I'll tell you about our friends over at Sleeper. When we get back, we'll finish up the show here. But first, our friends from Sleeper.
Sleeper is the number one fantasy sports app. It pays to know sports. Pick more or less on top players. Your first pick is on us, so start winning now. Play in Texas, Georgia, Minnesota, and 27 more states. Pick anytime across all sports, pregame or live. Over 10 million players are already on Sleeper. Make your picks count. Score up to 1,000 times your cash. Join today. Get up to $100 credit using code HMA. Call your shot on Sleeper. Download now.
All right. Let me tell you about our friends over at Sleeper. Now, let me change this so we can get this all situated. All right. We are back. Let me tell you about our friends over at Sleeper. Sleeper is a fantasy sports real money gaming app focused on bringing people together through sports, and their newest new edition version of Sleeper comes out with Sleeper Team Picks. They have Sleeper Picks, Sleeper Team Picks. You can tail and ride with your favorite team. Use that code. Don't forget HMA. Get a $100 deposit match up to $100. I went with the Pistons to win the Eastern Conference. So you can tail me, tail responsibly, bet responsibly. I am a homer. I'm going to make that very clear right now. So you don't have to tail those picks. But shout out to Sleeper for sponsoring the show as always. To kind of finish up the show here, I know you kind of went into the extension talk. That's where I was going to pivot, but I agree with the Sam Laporta and Brian Branch thing. I did want to ask you guys just kind of straight up though, because it's a question I have. I'm sure people have as well, with Jameer and Jack. those two probably the guys that you want to lock up the quickest. What is a realistic timeline that those contracts, just in your guys' opinion, get done? Because I see these reports. I don't know if it was Mike Garafalo, but you see these things throughout the offseason where it's like they're going to prioritize getting Gibbs done relatively soon. What's like a realistic timeline? I know like Brad likes to pay guys early for those two.
I think first and foremost, you get through free agency, right? And we've seen different time frames for their draft picks getting signed. And we saw the first wave in 2024 with Sewell and St. Brown. Those were getting done, I think, right around the draft, right? Maybe even like the week of the draft. Yeah. So, you know, you're talking about a late April, early May window. We saw Hutchinson carry all the way into late October, early November this year. And so the beauty of both those guys is they're going to toss the fifth year option on them in May if something's not done before that. That gives you all kinds of time to get done. And it could hypothetically leak all the way into next offseason as you kind of work through things. But as with all contracts in the NFL, given the steadily rising cap, and we know we've got a new TV deal coming here, this cap is going to continue to explode. The earlier you get it done, the cheaper it's going to be. Long term, it's just the way it works. That fifth year option generally gives teams a little bit of leverage, not so much in Jack Campbell's case because he went out and busted that plan up with a first team all pro, which elevated what that fifth year option will cost the Lions. But if they get done, I would expect them to get done more than likely before week one. And that you've got the whole window made a week one. That's it's a long window, but you know, that lets you kind of navigate everything else in the offseason.
Yeah, there are some guys that have gotten it done like midseason, like Ali McNeil was, I think, October 24. And that was like going in. He's on the final year of his rookie contract. So there's some sense of urgency there before free agency. Hutch had a weird situation where, like, you trust the player, obviously, like, you know what he's all about. But coming off the injury, maybe that was more on in ball in his court. Like, I'm going to try to maximize my earning potential with this contract. And if I have to wait a little bit, I'm cool with that because I'm going to get paid one way or another. so I think that worked out for him, obviously. Taylor Decker got extended in like August. I remember Brad said that, I think, on 97.1. We were just like training camp, like, what?
Shout out, Will. Where are the shout outs now, boys?
Yeah, shout out, Will. There we go.
Only for the clickbait stuff yeah. that you don't even do, Will. Yeah, that's what we say.
We don't chat you out for the good stuff. And then in April, like, yeah, obviously those deals got done. For guys like Jack and Jameer, I think. I'm wondering at the next few months if like one of those guys gets extended in April, like around the draft or before the draft. That would make some sense if they at least want to have some peace of mind, get some of those. Because when you have four of those looming, you can't just wait for all of those. So I imagine maybe one or two of those guys get done. Now, Laporta and Branch, that's a little bit tougher because those injuries and whatnot. Maybe you try to get a discount if you can. I don't know. If I'm Brian Branch, maybe I'm trying to. I don't know. I'll ask you guys, if you're Brian Branch, you're coming off the Achilles, the Lions come to you with an offer that's less than what you would have made healthy. Well, if you were healthy, would you take that for the security? Cause you just don't know coming off an Achilles injury, or would you wait a little bit longer and bet on yourself?
It's just so many damn ways to structure a contract, right? Like, yeah. If they throw out Kirby Joseph's contract to me, I'm like, I'm good. I'll wait. You know, like it might look big, but there's not a lot of guarantees. Like I think it really hinges on the guarantees. And if that deal is, let's say, you know, 10% less than maybe you would have made, but the guarantees were kind of in that right ballpark. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I might take it.
Yeah.
No, I'm with that. I feel like Jack Campbell is going to get done soon just because Jack Campbell doesn't strike me as a guy who's looking to extend negotiations to get the absolute maximum value the Lions or his agent could bring him. I feel like he's just telling his agent, like, if it's time, it's time. Yeah, go get it done and we're good. I can keep playing football, just kind of knowing Jack the way that we do. But it's a little bit staggering. Like, when Brad was talking yesterday about the, you know, how there's really just one budget. And, you know, if you want, you can divide it into two pots of, you know, money you spend on external players and money you use to sign your own players, but it's just one pot. He made the point a couple of times to point out that retaining players means paying players. And I feel like part of the reason he reminded everyone of that is because if we assume that all four of these guys who are extension eligible this offseason do get extended, help me do the math here. How many players will the Lions have at top of the market contracts. If we consider a top of the market, not just like the single highest salary, but like top three salaries at respective positions, they're going to be looking at like seven or eight or nine, maybe 10 players who are making top of the of the market money. And it's a reminder. I know some people might not want to hear it or love to hear it of why they do have to be a little bit conservative with external additions. Like, this is a team that is extending, retaining, paying big money to all of its guys and hoping that, you know, that with some external additions is the recipe to get into the top of the mountaintop, get into the top of the mountain.
I think there was one comment in the Holmes answer to the extensions where he kind of put out that either or vibe. You know, I could extend all these guys or we can make a splash. And that's kind of what you're talking about, right? It's one pot. But I feel like he did kind of leave that door open that maybe an outside free agent is compelling enough to build the best possible roster. And that might mean sacrificing one of the four long term.
Also, Kirby was mentioned. I feel like we should kind of talk about Kirby a little bit while we're here. Just because, I don't know, some of the answers about Kirby were not super encouraging. You know, Dan was asked about him. He said, we've been treating him. He's done a few things. We're in, and I would say, a position to where we're slowly working him back. So what is this going to look like? How's this going to feel? Call it a month from now. We'll have a lot better idea. Is this something where he's going to be able to handle what he's going to feel like? Or can we get it stable enough to where it can get enough strength? It's all those things. When he said that, I'm like, you'll have a better idea a month from now. This was a player that was trying like hell to work his way back to play the season and was having setback after setback. And now it's the offseason. You assume like some time away. I mean, the season ended like 7 weeks ago and he's still going to need another month to like kind of see where that thing's at. That's like, that's a little alarming to me. Like that, my ears kind of perked up when he said that. And I'm at a point where they probably need to add a safety. I think we are all in agreement there, but I wouldn't be shocked. I guess at this point, hearing some of the lingering things there, like, how high could you realistically take a safety in the draft? Like, I wouldn't be surprised with second round. But that's pretty you know, alarming to me, I guess. What do you guys think about that?
You definitely wanted to hear something positive, you know, just something encouraging. And it really felt like we shook the magic eight ball and it came up with ask later. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And it was flat from what we had heard at the end of the season. It was flat from when we heard when they put him on IR. And it's still crazy to me, right? There's a 25-year-old guy that came off an all-pro season, was balling at the highest level. And then I made the comp when I was talking to Dave this week. It kind of reminds me of DeAndre Levy, right? Like, that's a guy that was just incredible. And he went from, like, good to great, like, almost overnight, you know, season to season. And then had the hip injury and fell off the map and was out of the league in a couple of years after he had gotten his extension. And it's just like, it's a crappy part about football. I mean, there's just no better way to put it. Like, you've got these guys and you think you're set. And we talk about it all the time, the best safety tandem in the league. And suddenly, like, shit, you don't have any safeties now. I mean, Thomas Harper, but like, it's just wild how quickly a luxury turns into a gaping void on your roster.
Yeah, I feel pretty strongly that the Lions should invest like a semi-premium draft pick into a safety this year. Obviously, the board would have to suit them, but like, Bud Clark is a name that I'll bring up, and we'll get a chance to talk to some of these DBs tomorrow. But he's an interesting one for this, and not this alone. But if you look at his draft profile on NFL.com. His player comp is Kirby Joseph. And Bud Clark is a guy who had a ton of ball production at TCU, who's like really rangy, really instinctive. He will take some risks to hunt the ball, but more often than not, those risks are rewarded. You know, he's a player who can flip games by taking the ball away in the same way that Kirby was doing for this defense in 2024. And you know, I read more and more about him, and I wonder if the Lions have to give serious thought to drafting a player who might have to be a version of Kirby for them in 2027, because we've had this discussion before. The Lions will have to make a decision on Kirby's contract after this season, because if they delay it any further, the dead cap hits actually become prohibitive. And I know like the simple outlines of the contract online might not spell that out, but based on the way the option bonuses are structured, if they wait more than another year to try and get out of that contract, it'll just cost them too much to make sense. So this is a huge year for Kirby Joseph's future with the Lions, possibly his future in the NFL. And it's a huge offseason for the Lions in deciding what kind of reinforcements they need to add to the roster at safety.
Yep. Well, it's a perfect transition because I think, and tell me if you guys are up for this, for our Dog and Pony Show Brewing Pick of the Week, I figured I'd ask you guys if there's any player that you either spoke to or listened in on that maybe today you learned something new about, that maybe there's a reason why you're more interested or intrigued about a player. And it doesn't have to necessarily be why they would fit with the Lions, but just in general, because, you know, you got to hear from linebackers and you got to hear from defensive ends. Obviously, the Lions could use both those positions, but is there any player for your guys' pick of the week that maybe you didn't know beforehand or maybe know beforehand, then today you learned some good things about?
I got one for you, and Colton and I were just having this conversation in the media room here before coming on our episode, and this kind of dovetails with some takeaways from Kelvin Shepard. So I'll rewind it to Shep's press conference or his little scrum yesterday, where he was asked towards the end about the Lions probably over reliance on base defense last season and how that stood in really stark contrast to the rest of the NFL, and how they used nickel rarely and how that stood in stark contrast to the rest of the NFL, and in particular to the Seahawks, who played a ton of nickel defense and obviously just won the Super Bowl. And Shep's retort was, well, do you guys know who plays nickel for Seattle? It's that 6'3", 220-pound freak from South Carolina, Nick Emmanuori, who obviously stormed into the NFL last season as a safety who doubles as a linebacker. And it was interesting then today when, in speaking with Kyle Lewis, who is this very versatile, twitchy, speedy linebacker / safety, he said one of his defensive models is Nick Emmanuori. And
all right, you know,
and Shep also added, look, if I had a player like Emmanuori, or if I had Emmanuori, I'd probably play a lot of nickel too. And I think we have spent a lot of our kind of offseason conversations pondering shifts to this defensive scheme and you know, pointing to how many players the Lions have as defensive free agents as an opportunity for them to reshape the way this roster looks in 2026. And I think Kyle Lewis is a player who would add a lot of elements the Lions are missing in the front seven. That was a front seven that was healthy and was slow, quite honestly, by the end of the season. I think Kyle Lewis would give you some juice. He would give you a chess piece that Kelvin could use in a number of different ways to get into some more nickel looks. And you know, Lewis was fun to talk to. He was like, look, this is a changing league, especially now with the shift to you know, a lot of nickel defense, and I feel like I'm a player this league needs. He's probably going to be a day two pick. He might even rise into the second round. There are some concerns about his size. He's not quite the giant for the safety position or the linebacker hybrid position that Emmanuori is. He's 6 foot, Emmanuori is 6'3", but he has a lot of the same instincts. He does have the same like physical poundage as Emmanuori, and I think he just has some like dynamic attributes the Lions could really stand to add to their front seven. And he would give Shep a piece that would force Shep to consider different ways to devise his scheme in 2026.
What you got, Colton?
Yeah. First of all, glad Birchie's on the Kyle Lewis train. plenty of room on here. I would say for me, and I kind of thought I knew I was going to come to the combine. I knew I was going to go up there, see him talk, and like, yeah, that's a Lion. That guy's a Lion. And I'll reveal the player in a second. But it's funny because when you get to Indy and you're, you know, trying to evaluate which guys are Lions, you're listening to things that they're saying. You listen to how they react in certain situations, what kind of teammates they are. Those are like the keywords you're looking for. So when Keldrick Falk went up there, and man, I was like, this guy's a Lion. I mean, you hear stories like he donates his NIL to help, like, you know, teammates pay for school and things like that. And you're just like, yeah, that guy's going to look good in Honolulu Blue in like a month from now. So that's pretty cool. But, you know, I was curious about his background a little bit because I think I mentioned on the last show that a little bit concerned with the pass rush. I think his win rate was like 11.6% this past year. And first round edges since 2015, I believe, were, I think the average was like 17.3. So I wanted to learn like more about that, like why it was so low. And then I looked at his, you know, snap usage at Auburn. And I mean, obviously this guy's a versatile player, but when you look at the numbers, it really kind of tells it. He played 333 snaps at edge on the outside, 160 over tackle, 48 in the B gap and 11 in the A gap. For reference, like if, you know, Keem Mezidor, for example, he's another player that has been linked to the Lions a lot. Falk was at 333 outside. Mezidor was at 538. Falk was at 160 over tackle. Mezidor was at 92. Falk was at 48 in the B gap. Mezidor was at 10. Another player, Cassius Howell, 570 all on the outside. Nothing over tackle. Nothing in the B gap. Nothing in the A gap. R. Mason Thomas from Oklahoma, 322 outside. 37 over tackle. 6 B gap. 0 A gap. So my point is, Falk is this really versatile player. You listen to him talk. He's young, but he's so mature. Like, he carries himself so well. He's really intelligent. That maturity just kind of jumps off, I guess, the mic while we're up there. But, you know, I think when you look at his game, he's got these long arms. He's 20 years old. He's so versatile. They can move him all around the defensive line as this chess piece. I just think if he's there at 17 and you don't want to – he's the best player on the board. Like, you might need a tackle and you feel comfortable you can get one in the second round. I would be shocked if they didn't take him. He's sitting there at 17. I think that's kind of my biggest takeaway from listening to some of these guys, because I'm really looking for the right fits. And, you know, sometimes the Lions are comfortable waiting on that edge and drafting another player if the fit isn't right. I think Falk would be a perfect fit because he's everything that they're all about.
I think it's really interesting. And I talked about this last week. I'm so skeptical of guys that don't produce as pass rushers at the college level. And then you expect that at the pro level. And Falk had 2 sacks last year, and you talk about 11.6 win rush rate. Like, that's really, really concerning. And he's a young player. I get it. He's developing. He's hardworking. He's trying to get at it. But, you know, I've heard comps from Mykel Williams in last year's draft to Trayvon, number one pick over Aiden. And those guys were really exciting talents too, that didn't produce maybe at a high level in college. And it's happening now for Trayvon, but it's like 3-4 years in. And I said this to you, like, I don't know if the Lions have this window to wait for that guy to mm-hmm. get to his ceiling, if he even gets there.
That's the only question.
And so, yeah, I mean, it's just what raises skepticism. I, you know, I feel like I bag on Josh Pascal a lot, and it's unfair because I like the guy and I know that he puts the work in, but like, Pascal was a really good athlete that played inside and outside and didn't have maybe the production at Kentucky. And that's carried to the next level. And I look at Falk and I say, yeah, he'd be used in the same way that Pascal is kind of used in the system. And can he be better? Sure. The ceiling's there because it's the mystery box, but just what is the history of those guys being developed? And I just don't know. I didn't put a whole lot of effort into learning about linebackers coming into this event. There's just other positions of needs, but I got to tell you, I just, as the day kind of developed in the morning, I really became interested in Jacob Rodriguez's story.
Yeah.
This is a guy that was a like Swiss Army knife scholarship quarterback that caught passes, that ran the ball, that did everything at Virginia, I believe, as a freshman. And he decided, you know, that wasn't for him. He was going to transfer back home to Texas Tech. Walked on as a linebacker. It's like, okay, like that, what goes into that transition? Like mentally, the grind that goes into that. Dude finished 5th in the Heisman voting this year. He had more than 125 tackles both years, 7 forced fumbles, 4 interceptions. Like, reminds me of like Kyle Van Noy's stat line when he was coming out of college. Playmaker extraordinaire, obviously wasn't afraid of taking on an immense challenge of walking onto a school to try something really, really bold, and grinded his way to the top. And you just listen to the way he talked about it. On top of that, by the way, wife is a Blackhawk helicopter pilot. Like,
hell yeah.
This guy just like screamed Lion, and he's a little undersized. He's probably not going to have the greatest measurables. He's a guy that might, despite all this crazy production, maybe similar to like Malcolm Rodriguez, like slip into day three. And it's like, all right, like if he's in the fourth round, like, okay, you have two linebackers under contract. I think this guy has a really bright future in the league just because of the work ethic and just because of that knack of making plays. And so, you know, whether he ends up in Detroit or not, which admittedly 1 in 32 shot or less, but like, I'm going to be really interested to see how this kid's career develops.
Well, that'll do it for today's show. We appreciate all of you tuning in, and don't forget, we will be live again next week. So hit the like button, hit the subscribe button, and be sure to follow all of these guys, including myself, on social media. Stay in tune with what's happening with the Detroit Lions. We will catch you guys next week. But until then, we will see you.
Peace.